This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. You're listening to the Nerdcast on ProjectNerd.com.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
I knew it. I knew you were bluffing. I knew he was bluffing.
Welcome to the Nerdcast.
We're just like Kevin Bacon.
Featuring Adam, Bob, Iggy, and Tyler.
Smoke and mirrors, guys. Welcome to the movie factory.
Only on Project Nerd. Hey everybody, it is episode 174 of the Nerdcast. That's right here on Project Nerd. I have Adam, Bob, Tyler with me, Iggy. We're all here. We're all ready to talk about the week. Some big things to talk about. We'll cover a variety of things, but I think it'd be a shame if we didn't go straight to it. I know the biggest thing that happened in the geek world this week, obviously, was Stan Lee passing away on Monday, November 12th. Gentlemen, thoughts about Stan Lee to open us up?
That's a big question, man.
Yeah, it's a tough one too. Like, because the last, you know, he's been changing comics for a long time, but for the last whatever it is, 18 years, he's also been changing popular culture. Like, comic book movies have just taken over TV shows, the whole bit, like full pop culture, just taken over by characters and story arcs and things that he was intimately involved with. So I mean, that's a, you know, it's like, I don't know, that's hard.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a page pulled up. It says he's at least co-created 362 Marvel characters. That's right, Stan Lee created 362 characters. The majority of those are ones we've seen in those movies the past, as you were saying, 18 or so years. It's definitely impact. I remember Monday scrolling through Facebook after it happened and made my post, and the only posts on my newsfeed that weren't referencing Stan Lee were those wonderful Facebook advertisements. Other than that, every single person, people I didn't even expect to put it. So it was monumental. A lot of onions were being cut on Monday, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was a big deal. I mean, it's hard to, especially for how long he was in the game, you know, like pre-Marvel, post-Marvel, you know, when he was editor-in-chief and then just, you know, being the guy who was around, like, it's hard to encompass all the things he did, all the things he created. Like, you hit the big ones, you know, the Spider-Mans, the Iron-Mans, the Hulks, the Things, the Black Panthers, but then you get into all the other things over the years, like, even small ones, things that you would think originally would have been a small creation that went on to become, like, Jarvis, you know, the original Butler for the Avengers. I mean, there's just so much to unpack there. And then you go into, like, kind of the messages he was getting out there when he was using, like, how he used X-Men to talk about a ton of crazy important social issues, how he used Black Panther the same way, how he used Captain America the same way. I think there's a couple places where people have just recently just been posting screenshots of Stan's soapbox. So if you read a lot of old Marvel comics, when he was editor-in-chief, he would, at the back of a lot, most of his comics would have a little paragraph he would just write that would be something he was typically ranting about, and almost always they were, you know, against bigotry and against racism, against, you know, all sorts of crazy things. And it was the things he was doing in the 60s and 70s, I don't think he until recently got enough credit for as a comic book writer, because comic books were seen as such a lower, you know, lesser art form. And I think it wasn't until his 80s and 90s that he started. I mean, in our world, like, obviously everyone always knew who Stan the Man was. I mean, he was showing up in movies as himself as early as, you know, Mallrats. Like, in our world, like, Stan the Man will always be Stan the Man. But it wasn't until, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, where I think there was a... So obviously a lot of people have been coming out and writing articles about what Stan meant to him, especially stars of a lot of the Marvel movies. And there was a really good... Hugh Jackman was on Stephen Colbert, like, last night or the night before, talking about meeting Stan Lee and what he thought of Stan Lee and how he explained how he had just become Wolverine. And when Hugh Jackman became Wolverine, he wasn't a super well-known actor. He had done some stuff, but he wasn't, you know, a huge international megastar as he was now. And he's like, I was feeling pretty good. I'm going to be Wolverine. I'm doing all these things. And he's like, you don't really appreciate who he is until you're on the red carpet and you're the only person on it except for him, and you there's no one near you because there's 300 people thronged around Stan Lee on the red carpet at Comic-Con taking his picture because he's Stan the man. I cannot, without sitting down and spend some time, articulate it well enough, but there's been a lot of people who have done a much better job than I ever will. I would say, if you get a chance, The Root has a really good article from Jason Johnson about Stan Lee that I just read today, and it was really, really good. So check that one out. It's sad. I mean, people, you know, get a hard time sometimes about how worked up people get over, you know, deaths of celebrities or artists or something like this. But this was, especially in our world, but now that he's reached out to touch so many other people who prior to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, he may not have, like, this was a big deal. And he was a great guy who did a lot of great things for comics and society in general. So excelsior.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably one of the first deaths that's really going to affect a lot of the youth in this country, because, you know, most of them didn't really, I mean, they just heard Michael Jackson music and stuff like that. But Stan Lee was someone that they followed because of the movies, because of the comic books. I think it's definitely going to affect a lot of people. I mean, I put Stan Lee up there, up to like Ray Bradbury as a writer, as an artist, whatever, as a creator. I mean, he is someone that definitely, I think, made a difference in a lot of people's lives. He had those little blurbs at the end of the comics that discuss different issues going on. It's kind of like, you know, Tyler also mentioned, like, Hugh Jackman. Everybody was around Stan Lee when, you know, first time I saw Stan Lee at a convention was back, I think, our first C2E2, and he was there. And there was an electricity in that room when he was on stage. When he came up, it just, the place went crazy. And you never really had thought that that was going to happen. I mean, I think at the time, I think he was like 89 years old and something like that. I mean, he lived 95 years, and I tell you, he made the most of them. It's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing guy.
That's a huge piece of it. He was 95. This is shouldn't be a huge surprise, but I think it still all hits us like it because of until this year was the first year he had to stop the conventions, right? Like, he was still right there in the spotlight, all the cameos, the conventions, the everything that we are in, you know, that we're going to and be participating in, he's right there as just it. And it's hard to really think that, yeah, he was 95. He didn't really, you know, a big thing that is shared about and was brought up again this week is, you know, his first creations really took off after the age of 39. It was, you know, he was 39 when it all started. So people who are in their 20s and everything feel like they haven't accomplished anything yet. I mean, look what this guy did. And I think Tyler brought up a really strong point. It's even though at the time comics was a lesser art form, that voice that was being made in the 70s and stuff like that was before that voice was being, you know, presented anywhere else. There wasn't that push like the X-Men was presenting and stuff like that. And he was doing it in a way that's not like, here's a social or political statement down your throat, but here's a way I can tell it that's also entertaining and makes you connect with these people and realize, you know, I can relate to them, even though they're mutants and we're not. I don't know. It's definitely, I was thinking about that, Bob. You brought up Michael Jackson and stuff, and I was trying to think of the celebrities passing that have impacted me the most. And the other three that I can think of are all musicians. And anything that was close to that was musicians as well. And then here was this one. I was a creator, and the influence, like we said, we know comic creators, we know all these people that go to these conventions constantly, and the people, there was tons of them that were sharing pictures of them as children meeting him back in the 90s. And this is why, you know, this is why Jeff Balke became a colorist. This is why J. Scott Campbell became an artist. He influenced them at that point. It's huge. It's huge. It is a huge, huge gap that is going to be there for a long time in this world.
And I'm glad you brought up Mallrats, Tyler, because I think, like, I don't know if that's exclusively a comic book nerd, you know, movie. Like, I feel like it got so much buzz that there are so many people who didn't read comic books who saw that movie who, you know, found out who Stan Lee was because of Jason Lee and his unhealthy obsession with the name of names in his Amal. And, you know, the crazy thing, you know, in the 90s, Stan Lee was probably doing mall comic shop appearances. Like, it wasn't what it is now. I mean, it's so crazy how not long ago that seems and how very different the world is around that kind of entertainment. And so, you know, I loved that scene in Mallrats and talking to him about the Things thing and all of these really inappropriate but absolutely hysterical things. And Stan Lee just cruises right along with him. Like, I mean, it's so fantastic. Like, that was, I mean, I'll be honest. We've all talked. I don't read a lot of comic books. I didn't read a lot of comic books as a kid. I didn't know who Stan Lee was. But I found out after Mallrats, and I was like, holy crap, this guy literally has written everything. Every character other than the DC stuff that I've heard of was created by Stan Lee. That's absolutely unbelievable. I think it's crazy. I don't know.
Well, that's how big of an impact it was, is obviously the Marvel website, not just the Marvel comics, but the Marvel website's homepage was changed to him with a quote, DC Comics, and they're always considered this huge rival between Marvel and DC, released a statement and put it on all their social medias and on their site and everything too, regarding what he did for the industry and stuff too. It is huge. And you talk about the difference between then and now. Yeah, I remember seeing him at a Wizard World in the 90s, and he was at... there was no celebrity row at conventions back then, at comic conventions. There wasn't. And he was there in another row. I didn't take the time to go get his autograph or anything. I wasn't huge into Marvel at that time when I was younger. And I obviously, you know, you can say I regret it now, but he was just there. Like, it was just another person there. And then, you know, Bob, you bring up seeing him at C2E2 and Planet Comic Con, all these other ones, and he's walking with 12 to 15 person posse, and everything's like, he's got like guards around him. He's got people putting him in different directions. And his fame definitely grew. And I think, as we've said it probably a million times already in these first 15 minutes or so, it's not just comics, it's pop culture and everything else that he's influenced. And not only do you not have these characters, you don't have these movies, you don't have this, I mean, so much that's happening right now that we're enjoying. It's crazy. And again, he was 95 years old. It was going to happen. It was going to happen soon. And yet it still feels like it's too soon. I do know tons of artists. I'm sure everybody's seen it. If you listen to a podcast called The Nerdcast, I'm sure on your social media, you've seen plenty of the artwork shared. So don't even have to point you to it. You know, Tyler pointed out an article, different sites and stuff. But yeah, a lot there, a lot to unpack. I don't know. I'm sure Tyler could easily answer this. You know, favorite characters he created. I know Tyler would have one in particular he'd jump to first. I don't know if Adam or Bob would have any thoughts on some of the characters. Favorite characters he made.
I mean, Spider-Man's always been my guy. I mean, I feel like that's the easiest answer because that's the most recognizable character that he's ever created. But his list is so freaking long. Like, it's not just villains and not just heroes, but villains as well.
Doom and Galactus. Like, I mean, those are his. Yeah.
Galactus, Silver Surfer, Kingpin, Green Goblin, Dr. Octopus, Mary Jane Watson,
J. Jonah Jameson.
Pretty much all the original Avengers, you know, Wasp and Ant-Man and Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, all the original
Thor supporting characters, Heimdall, Hela, Loki.
Yeah. I mean, Gwen Stacy, Mary Jane Watson. I mean, The Watcher, Doctor Strange,
yeah,
Black Panther,
Inhumans, too.
Daredevil. Obviously, we mentioned Iron Man earlier. The Thing. All of the Fantastic Four. The Hulk, She-Hulk. It's hard to pick just one. So you're going to X-Men. Adam's throwing up the big X. So
I choose X-Men. Yeah. Well, I mean, again,
Nick Fury. Nick Fury.
I didn't read a lot of comics. I definitely watched the X-Men TV show religiously. The cartoon. Oh my God, that was my jam. I've got a Comic-Con story very similar to yours, Ziggy, and you'll probably kick me next time you see me if I have to guess. But yeah, no, I mean, for me, it would be the X-Men. As I got older, the really not that veiled social commentary is powerful. It's strong and really impressive in those stories, and I really enjoyed it.
You know, one thing that's been cool in all the Marvel films is Stan Lee always had that cameo in every one of them. And we still got two more left. I mean, Captain Marvel and the next Avengers, he has already filmed his cameos for those films. So, you know, we'll get to see him a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely. And he's had some great cameos.
Ooh, I don't know. I don't know if that's better or if that's going to be like,
oh,
that's going to be hard. Oh, man.
Yeah. But you
know, it's interesting for sure. I know. And going back to, I think the biggest thing we can talk about all day about what he created, what he did, for us who are nerds, for me, who's wanted to make comics since I was 10 years old. And as I got older, the influences there. And even making them. I mean, Project Nerd made comics, you know. Is that even possible without the lead of somebody like this to get it to this level, you know? And it's just crazy because what we brought up already and what I think so many people overlook is what he was saying. And it's not just the X-Men, it's the Inhumans. It's Iron Man dealing with, you know, alcoholism and addiction. It's Spider-Man with the, you know, having to choose to save everybody or the girlfriend. Like, these weren't Superman just flying in and lifting the car and saving Lois Lane and everything was great at the end of the day. It was real life problems with these people. It was real social issues before, you know, being touched on before society was just saying, let's take this on. It was, you know, almost everything I can think of, you know. The Fantastic Four, even, it all had something. And I think so many people, I love DC, I do. And probably for the sole purpose of why most people, if somebody says they love DC the most, it's because of Batman. It is solely because of Batman. And that's exactly what it is. But when you really break down all of the DC universes versus all the Marvel universe, and I think Tyler has mentioned this so many times, the Marvel characters are there. You can relate to so many of them. And that's because of the creating and the writing that Stan Lee did.
Well, I mean, he forced DC to be better. It was always referred to as like the distinguished competition. But like, you look at DC Comics and some of DC's stable of like the big ones, the Supermans, the Batmans, the Wonder Womans, the Flashes, all of the big ones. You look at them pre like the Marvel Renaissance and pre like Stan Lee at Marvel and post Stan Lee at Marvel. And obviously he did some work for DC at one point with like the Just Imagine series and stuff like that. But I don't know that there's anyone, especially anyone who worked at DC at that time, who wouldn't be the first to admit that like the things that Stan Lee did forced DC to get better. And then DC did things that forced Marvel. I mean, like that competition kept them both good, but like, for everything he did for Marvel, like not directly, but by bringing Marvel up to the level that it got to when he was running the things, like DC got better because of him. And I think a direct debt, but there's definitely a debt that all comic books owe to what he did to change, to morph, you know, and to change and to elevate, you know, the medium.
Well, as always, we want to hear what you guys thought. We'd love to hear favorite characters. If you had chances to meet him, favorite stories, favorite cameos, you know, we're talking about as far back as Mallrats, a Simpsons cameo in there too, as well as all of the Marvel movies, even down to Deadpool 2, where he's just a photo on the wall. You have all those cameos. You can definitely share that with us. Anything he did, you know, that impacted the industry, or maybe it is those stories, like we said, so many of our creator friends that have shared of how they influenced them, to be something. So definitely let us know in the comments below, whether you're finding us on Project Nerd, Podbean, social media, wherever. If you can comment, we'd love to hear it. It is Stan Lee for sure. Icon, 95 years old. Wonderful, wonderful creator. And I think we've said so much of it already. With that, it's really, really hard to move on to the other news, but I mean, Monday alone with the day that he passed was just filled with geek news. It felt like at the beginning of the day that it was just going to downpour. It was such a big day with news that Pixar's own Toy Story 4 teaser trailer kind of flew under the radar. It was such a big day. And I think a part of that was due to another trailer that came out that I don't think any of us were quite ready for. And that was Detective Pikachu. And I think my favorite thing I've seen so far on it on the internet is Pokemon jokes about Ryan Reynolds voicing a Pikachu character. The internet says there's no way it's going to happen. And here we are with a movie of Ryan Reynolds voicing a Pikachu character. Guys, what are your first thoughts on this crazy live action Pokemon movie, at least the trailer?
Oh, my first thought, and the trailer, you're right, caught me completely off guard. But as soon as I finished watching it, my immediate thought was, oh my God, I hope Ryan Reynolds convinces them to let him do an R-rated or unrated version to release on the Blu-ray. Like, can you imagine how much that would sell with Pikachu just dropping F-bombs throughout the whole thing? Like, oh, sweet Lord. Oh, Tyler, don't give me that look. It would sell a lot of copies.
It
would be very funny. Wholly inappropriate, but very funny.
I have, here on this podcast and in many other forums, professed my uncomfortable love for Ryan Reynolds. But I feel like Deadpool has almost ruined him for voice acting roles, because like you hear him as the voice is a thing and all you can hear is Deadpool. I almost feel like they should have gone with someone else slightly less recognizable. Like, I love him and I will watch it. I have a lot of weird, I was never a huge Pokemon kid. I was a little bit too old for the original Game Boy game, I've played a lot of the Pokemon games and I have a lot of friends who are really into Pokemon. I will probably see this movie. It does look interesting and fun, but I don't know quite how I feel about it. My concern is like they'll play up the whole that only the one kid can understand him and that it's Ryan Reynolds. I'm concerned they'll play that up too much. Like, I will get very upset at the writers if the biggest laugh in the movie is Pikachu hitting his shin or stubbing a toe or having something bad happen to him and immediately begin what would I assume be a, you know, profanity-laced tirade, and the camera immediately cuts to the point of view of someone who's not the main character, and all you hear is him in a high-pitched voice saying Pika 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 over and over and over again while he is obviously just screaming obscenities. So I'm sure that's going to be a scene in the movie. I hope that there are better laughs in there than that. If that's the peak of it, like, I think we all see that one coming. That one's going to be in the movie, so you have to do better. You have to top that one.
Did it show what the rating was going to be, if it was going to be PG or PG-13?
I can't see this being
anything. It's got to be PG.
Yeah. This is first trailer, so we're probably obviously well above the ratings. Very rarely do we see the rating this quickly, but I can't see this not being PG. This has its target audience for sure, and we're not it. Although there's going to be a lot of people our age who are going to be pretending they're it.
Trust me, I know a lot of people our age who still were out there doing...
Well, I'm not saying they're not, Pokey. I'm just saying this: the movie itself, the content of the movie, is definitely targeting a younger audience. I do know, after I picked up my daughter from school and showed her the trailer, I her jaw dropped. I think she was, I don't think I've seen her get this excited for a trailer in a long, long time. And she loves movies. You guys know that. She loves movies. So this was huge, sir. This was huge. And that's easy to say because she's in the other room sleeping with like three Pokemon stuffed animals right now. So, and pretty sure one of them is Pikachu. So.
Does this have a Who Framed Roger Rabbit impact, do you think? Like, because that really kind of had that
feel.
It did really well with the animated, not animated characters and telling that story that kind of lived in that world. And we didn't see a whole lot of it after that. Is this something that breaks that door down now that it's not cheap, but at least cost effective to do?
I think it has to, because this is Pokemon wants to do a lot of these. Like, so you have to do that to be able to set up this universe that they want us to see of where these Pokemon are right there with human people, not this animated, you know, even Japan style animation or, you know, brought over here and revoiced. They want this to feel very much like we're seeing a real live world that we are in today, just filled with Pokemon everywhere.
Yeah, I wish they had gone harder in one direction or the other. Like, there's been a lot of, over the years, artist takes on realistic-looking Pokemon. I feel like this one, they tried to pick, like, a happy medium. They're still kind of cartoony, brightly colored, a little bit otherworldly-looking, but at the same time adding realistic fur and scales and stuff like that. I feel like they should have, I don't know, I think there's still, like, I think part of it's part of kid appeal, part of it is trying to keep those iconic looks, but, like, they definitely, it makes it, I think, more uncanny valley than it needs to be, because they kind of, they tried to ride that line between, this is what a Pokemon looks in the video games and animated, this is what the Pokemon looks like in real life. They tried to draw a line right down the middle, and it made it almost a little bit too weird, but I will withhold judgment until I see it, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's not Final Fantasy Advent Children Uncanny Valley or The Spirits Within or any of that stuff where you're like, this is unsettling. I don't, I'm not supposed to have nightmares of this, but I'm going to have nightmares of this.
Polar Express. That's all I have to say.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
There were no souls behind those eyes. That's all I can say.
Also, no matter how good this movie is, like, it's not Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Like, nothing's gonna have that kind of impact. That was a world-changing movie, and like, that did some things that had never been, and that was like hand animated, like, right, on the film, and it was a whole thing.
But we still didn't see that, you know, the question was, we still didn't see that afterwards. Like, it didn't become a thing.
Yeah.
Even,
well, I think
even that, as well loved as that was.
Well, I also think it came at a weird time where, like, computers were just starting to get into the mix, because that was hand animated, like, onto the film stock. And I don't think there was a lot of people out there with the dedication and or the money to get another movie made back then that wasn't named Steven Spielberg. You know, like, I don't know that that was going to.
Well, that's, I mean, because you're talking cross studio rights and everything too.
Like, that was a once in a lifetime kind of achievement. Like, I can only, outside of like things that were done, you know, like Fred Astaire dancing with cartoon character, like stuff like that, the only other movie I can think of that even attempted it from beginning to end is that, just really awful movie that is Cool World.
Yeah.
I think that's where you're going. I knew that's where you're going.
I mean, and it did it okay. It didn't do it as well as, like, it was not a good movie, but the conjunction of, like, animated characters interacting with non-animated characters, it was better than, I don't know. But I the other thing is there's not a lot of reason to do it. Like,
I haven't thought about Cool World in a hot minute.
It works for Who Framed Roger Rabbit because it's trying to tell a very specific story, and you were using super iconic characters. You were using Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck and all that sort of stuff. Outside of that one, now that one's come and gone, like, I can't think of another reason outside of Pokemon's, I guess, a good reason. Like, I can't think of another reason to do animated with human.
Space Jam,
that'll be curious to see how that goes.
Well, in okay, so follow-up question. If this is successful, we know Hollywood cannot let the past lie where it is. How long before we get a remake of Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
You can't. You can't.
It'll never happen.
We were watching Hook this weekend, and I just think Bob Hoskins, like, you can't replace him in Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Like, how do you do Smee again? Like, it's never been that to that level because it's Bob Hoskins. Like, he is those characters.
It also is, you'll never, until Disney owns each and every one of us, like, no one's ever going to let that sort of, like, Warner Brothers isn't going to let, you know, Donald Duck and Daffy Duck have a piano duel. They're not going to let Mickey Mouse and Bugs Bunny.
It's so good. I need to watch that movie now.
It's so never, good. Never going to happen ever again. Like, that sort of cooperation and cross-platform, like, it was a whole... Because Disney...
But if somebody could do it, it would be Steven Spielberg. Definitely.
Again?
Right. What if we see it as a lead-in to a Avengers Justice League crossover movie?
Here's the thing, is you say that Steven Spielberg could do it, but Steven Spielberg had trouble getting rights to stuff to make Ready Player One. Like, he had to leave stuff out, and not like huge giant, and he wasn't asking for, you know, Bugs Bunny. He was asking for some fairly obscure things and had trouble getting rights to a lot of stuff. That's like the creators not wanting to put it in whatever the movie is and stuff like that, but it wasn't, he ended up having to like cut a lot of things because he couldn't get the rights to put
Disney them, right? Disney actually specifically in that too with the Star Wars stuff.
Yeah,
I don't know, it's I mean, it's generated a lot of conversation right here already. I've seen a lot of conversation online though. If anything, the Warner Brothers here has got something cooking with this Pokemon, you know, live action universe they're trying to create, starting with the Detective Pikachu.
Press is good press, buddy.
Right Everybody's talking about it. As noted, all of this is going on, and Pixar throws out their weekly punch with, hey, here's the Toy Story 4 teaser just ahead of, you know, the new Wreck-It Ralph movie coming out. Not a whole lot going on in the teaser, so I can understand how it kind of took the backseat to all these other things we're talking about. But still, Toy Story 4 is coming out next year, guys. And the first trailer came out to it, not page one news for some reason. But I do believe we also were introduced to two new characters that will be voiced by Key and Peele, by the way. So that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, but I think compared to everything else, it is kind of what you expect from Toy Story. Like, I mean, there's nothing like, oh man, here we go. This is going to be it. Like, it's just kind of like, yep, we got Pixar animation, we got Toy Story characters. There's going to be new ones, sure, okay.
But you know, when you saw that, when you see that preview, you just get the feels. You just like, okay, next summer is going to be great. And now this just adds to it how good it's going to be.
It's going to be a huge year for movies. And, well, I'll see it. I'll see Toy Story 4 as well. But I didn't really get the feels. I was interested to see what this little weird spoon creature was that clearly some kid made.
I knew something was coming up when I saw everybody and saw the spoon.
But I mean, are we heading down Pirates of the Caribbean level here? Like, I'm starting to get Toy Story'd out a little bit. Like, I'll take an Incredibles 3.
Toy Story 3 was like way up here. Any of the Pirates of the Caribbean, they were just way down here. I mean, it doesn't take much to beat Pirates of the Caribbean anymore. But I'd be glad to see, honestly, I'd be glad to see a Toy Story more than a Finding Nemo sequel or a Cars sequel. You know, there was, you know, we all saw Toy Story 3. We all got the, you know, I think every adult male probably shed a, yes, you did. Don't you shake your head. You didn't shed a tear, you know, at that very end. I mean, I can't believe you shook your head.
Look, first of all four of us, the one who's most likely to cry at a movie on this podcast is this guy right here. Me.
Yeah.
Toy Story 3. I did not cry. And I think it was because I was just, all right, we've had an, okay, maybe I did cry, and it's because I hadn't had Incredibles 2
there you
at
go.
That point.
There
by the time go. We had Toy Story 3.
But you're both monsters. Like, that was that last scene when that was
a killer scene.
That was rough.
Not have seen that movie all the way through.
You need to see all that movie all the way through.
He gives the toys to the other kid, and it is like a...
No, not that scene. The scene where they're on the conveyor belt about to get burned alive and are like all holding hands.
They're all in the pit.
They're toys.
In the pit, yeah, the fire pit. That was horrifying for kids.
Yeah. And fuck you too. That was rough.
And that's and that scene was just like, holy crap, they're gonna melt. Yeah, that's one of the very few Pixar movies I actually saw at the theater. I wanted to see that one at the theater. I saw Incredibles at the theater, yeah, but that was one. I mean, and like I said, I'll see this one at the theater because it has a history, you know.
But I want new movies from Pixar. Give me new voices. Give me new, like anything. Any studio at all, give me something new, please. And I think that's what's got me excited about the Detective Pikachu. Like,
it's new.
Okay, this is a new story. Do something new.
It's original. And that, I have to agree with you on that. There is, we all say it all, we say it all the time. There's no originality in Hollywood anymore. There's, you know, it's a sequel, 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 sequel. I mean, I think the last four or five, I think Pixar movies were sequels.
No, they were not. Like, yeah, people forget that they almost always split their sequels up with original ones. In the last, you know, 5 years, we've gotten Coco. We've gotten The Good Dinosaur. We've gotten Inside Out. We got Brave.
Did we really get The Good Dinosaur, though? Did we really get that one?
I didn't want The Good Dinosaur.
It wasn't that bad.
Yeah, it was.
It was pretty bad.
It wasn't great, but it wasn't the worst.
I'm looking at
Brave was only 6 years ago.
Yeah, I said 5 years. I didn't say 6 years. I said
Coco was huge.
Coco was huge.
But I'm looking at the summer movies, the summer Pixar movies when I'm saying this. I mean, if you look at every summer movie since Coco, it's been a...
They've come out with one movie since Coco, and it was Incredibles 2.
I mean, so he's not lying.
Listen, if you want them to keep making new movies, they also still have to make money. And as it turns out, when you release sequels to beloved television, to beloved kids' movies in the summer, a lot of people go see them. So,
well, here's Devil's Advocate.
Listen, if you're going to shit on someone for like going to the well too many times or beating the shit out of a franchise or milking it till it's dry, Pixar is not the company you go after.
They've made a few
that are like rough. But first of all, Pixar has made a grand total of, 20 movies at this point? And of those, how many of them are sequels? So you'd say we're
going
to have...
I'm not going after them for making sequels. I'm going after them because they were that studio with the new voice.
Yes, they were the ones...
And they're losing that.
Yeah, they were the ones that did all the original...
You don't get to be, like, the... At some point, you have to continue. Like, you build a thing, and you have to keep being successful at it. No one ever gets to stay that way. So
real quick, not to side with Tyler on this, but to play devil's advocate, Adam, just last week, you were complaining that why is Shrek rebooting when they could just start making new movies with different subtitles. And the thing is, with Toy Story, you have toys that will exist for forever. So you just change the world around them, the house they're in, the family. And this could kind of go on forever.
I'm okay with that. That's a new story in the universe. And I'm not complaining about making sequels. I want new stories too, though. And part of it, Iggy, is kind of like I was saying at the end there, is it's their success with those new stories that they had to begin with that makes me want to hear new stories from them. I don't complain when DreamWorks puts out another Shrek because I don't care. They're not good. I don't watch them. I don't expect them to do amazing, you know, deep, heartfelt movies like I expect from Pixar. Yeah. And so I want to hear those new voices and those new stories, not just another story that tugs on the same heartstring. Like Inside Out was fantastic because it was so different than the stuff they've done. And I enjoyed that.
Well, the thing is it takes an obscenely long time to make a Pixar movie between all the computer animation, the storyboard and stuff like that. They, at last count, had, outside of after Toy Story 4, they have movies slated to come out, like two in 2020, one in 2021, 2022. And they have like four or five movies in production, known movies in production, that are all original ideas. Like, but I'm sure Disney wants them to, I mean, so if we count Toy Story 4 as a movie that is going to come out, Pixar's come out with 21 total movies, and of them, like seven were sequels. So one third of their movies they've made have been sequels. And with the exception of a couple of them, I would say that they were all really good. Like, you can forget about Cars 2.
Why did Cars have sequels? Like, why?
Because the merchandising for it was fucking huge. Like, Cars 3 was crazy popular. Like,
I think Cars 3 is the only Pixar I haven't seen, actually.
Is there a third Cars?
Yeah, it just dropped like in the last year or two, didn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. But the Cars...
It's in like, that five-year window we were talking about earlier.
The merchandising for Cars outstrips like literally anything Disney's done in the last decade. People buy that stuff, the Lightning McQueen stuff and all that.
When my son was little, we had Lightning McQueen everywhere. You guys know that. Like, McQueen was everywhere.
Yes, you did.
You know, Adam, you made the comment about the new voices and stuff like that. The bad thing about it is those new voices, Pixar does use those new voices, but they're the ones that do the little 7 and 8 minute movie before you see the Cars 3 or the whatever the sequel will be. You know, unfortunately, they are making movies, but they're not really, you know, I'd like to see more from them.
Those shorts, like,
they're great.
Can do more to your emotions than most full length features.
That one last one about it was a strange one about the Oriental woman and her son was the big dumpling. You know, that was just the most bizarre thing in the world, but man, that was good.
So good. I love One Man Band. One Man Band might always be my band.
That is a good one.
Of the 20 movies that Pixar has released, exactly 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them have a Rotten Tomatoes score of less than 90%. And one of them, Brave, which I don't get.
How many of those are the sequels?
Cars 3 and Cars 2.
All three of the cars are less than 90.
Planes?
Planes is not a Pixar movie. Planes was inspired, like, they didn't make that. I don't know why people try to put that in there. That's way better than what they would do. So you got three of them are the Cars movies right there. So what are the other three that have a less than 90% on Rotten Tomatoes?
You said Brave, so we
which
got
is baffling to me. Brave
that
is
seems
Brave
bizarre.
Just awesome. Wasn't Brave is a really Brave. Strong movie and a strong story, but it just wasn't as well received. It seemed like, but the Good Dinosaur is going to be one of them.
Which Good Dinosaur is one of them.
Right. So we have one left.
Big Hero 6.
No, that's not
Bugs Life.
Is that not Pixar?
No, Bugs Life is like a 92. Bugs Life was awesome.
Wow.
Bugs Life's Kurosawa, dude.
Wait, what?
What?
It's totally the it's Seven Samurai story.
Oh, okay. I was like, okay.
That's anyways, I can't decide if it's gonna be Monsters University or
what?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of
it. It has to be Monsters University because there's no other
I guess so. Movies. Yeah.
And that even the bad ones, except for like Cars 2, are not bad.
Monsters University was a good sequel.
That was probably in the 80s, I would say, right?
It was both Brave and Monsters University were a 79. Ooh. Good Dinosaur was a 76. Cars 3 was a 68. And Cars 2 was a 40.
Yeah.
A strong 40, though. Strong 40.
I mean, let's see. Cars 2 did make... I mean, it made over... $500 million worldwide gross unadjusted. So
yeah, people will see anything.
It's opening weekend. No, kids will see anything.
Yeah,
people will see anything.
I'm gonna go with the people.
I'm gonna direct you to the Transformers movie.
Yeah, but even those, like, eventually that kind of peters out. Like, you can make the worst G-rated movie ever if you release it the right time of year. Like, it will make.
There is.
It's called Hotel Transylvania 4.
It'll break $50 million at the box office.
Hotel Transylvania 3 was actually kind of cute.
Oh, Bob, but yeah,
is that the cruise one?
Killing me, Bob. You're killing me.
I did say it was good. I said it was cute. Good. There's a difference.
It was watchable. It was watchable.
But you went and you saw it.
I have it.
Oh,
it Bob. It was a good popcorn flick.
We can't talk right now because we're all laughing so hard on mute. But I did want to say one more thing. We're talking about the original ideas. Yeah, Coco was within the last year or 18 months at least, but I'm pretty sure it was last fall, if I remember correctly. And I don't, what's that score?
It came out almost exactly a year ago. It came out November 22nd of last year. So it's almost
a
year ago.
And
Coco is a 97 on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's fantastic. It is probably one of their best.
An A plus on CinemaScore and an 81 on Metacritic. So it is one of their highest. I mean, their highest reviewed one for the most part is Toy Story, but that's just because it was a game changer. Like, it changed the game.
You know, I want more of those. I'm not saying they're not doing them and they don't do a good job. They do a great job. That's why I want more.
We need more game changers like Inside Out.
Well, I feel like Coco and, to the other side, Disney's Moana have been huge because of the cultural impacts that they have.
Well, then you guys go make world changing computer generated movies, because I think Pixar. I think if you're gonna get after someone making movies out there, Pixar is not the. It's been so like the first movie. What year did Toy Story come out? How about that?
2002.
No, what, seriously?
97.
95.
Wow. Yeah.
So we've gotten almost one movie a year for Pixar for over 20 years. And all of them, with very few exceptions, have been exceptional. So maybe cut them a fucking break.
It's not that I'm getting after them, Tyler. It's that because of their success, I want them to direct all of that talent and all of that ability to telling new stories, as opposed to just...
regenerating.
But they are telling new stories. They are telling new stories. They had a new story last year.
I get it.
And you know how much harder it is to make a new computer-generated models versus like, oh, we have like
these. Oh, just, yeah, because the Toy Story.
Yeah. That's the thing. If you ever watch,
sure, it's awful.
If you watch any of the behind the scenes of all of their short films, almost every short film recycles models from all their other movies, because it's fucking hard to make goddamn computer-generated movies. I get that you want them to make new stuff. And like I said, they're working on four original movies right now, but it's not easy.
So they're making, they're reusing the old models because they're lazy?
No,
they're making it because it's fucking easier and a lot cheaper.
Here's the thing. There has never been a Pixar conversation on a podcast with that many F-bombs before.
I don't
know. Well, they damn well should be.
I don't know why you guys are so.
I don't think anybody's, first of all, Bob and I really aren't taking a side on anything with this. Adam is making a pretty solid point that he has an opinion that
I get that he wants them to make new stories, and they're making on average one brand new, completely original, from the ground up animated feature once every 2 years, which is more than you can say any other studio out there.
There's a reason, there's an expression, the victim of your own success, and that's what Adam's getting at. Nobody disagrees. Right. And I keep noting Coco, because I think Coco was, it to some realms, a game changer.
Yeah. In the last 12 months, you had them come out with a brand new goddamn story that was really good and super well received. And I don't know.
Tyler needs some lavender tea right now. Somebody get this man some lavender tea.
But wasn't Coco basically a remake of the Book of Love?
No, the Book of Life is very different.
Very different.
And the Book of Life is also, I think, a very underrated movie.
Yeah, which
it's not fantastic. That, but, very beautiful.
Coco is, very, they both deal with, obviously, the Day of the Dead, but probably, besides that cultural connection, there's really no other similarity.
And also, like, they cost a lot to make. Like,
You see, that's bringing up cost.
We got it.
They make cost money. A lot to make. Doesn't matter. They make money.
Yeah, I'm saying, but it's an animated movie. And it takes each of them so takes like
closing.
They on average cost like $200 million to make. And there's a lot of other companies you guys could give a hard time to. Maybe just fucking lay off Pixar.
And Tyler, basically, the last game changer that Pixar actually came out with was WALL-E. That was a game changer.
No, Coco.
Oh, Coco was.
No. Are you kidding me? Coco had the cultural, like, their directors to the people making music, everything were of the culture.
It had the biggest opening in, like, Latin America of any movie ever. It's, like, now the highest grossing movie in Mexico of all time. It explored a culture that has been vastly, like, underrepresented in cinema, and it was really good.
We're running short on time, and so... as much as we want to sit here and argue about Pixar for whatever reason.
I just don't understand why you guys are giving them a hard goddamn time.
We do have to mention that there was an animated movie that came out this past weekend that opened at the box office, somewhere around 65 million, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, about 67 million, The Grinch.
Okay. And that one is not getting the love that Pixar gets, supposedly for good reason. It seems to be a pretty soft adaptation of the classic Grinch story.
But it's like a prequel, right?
No, it's the Grinch. It's the Grinch Stole Christmas, basically. No,
I thought it was like, it's like the how he became the Grinch.
That I feel like Bob has probably seen it since it's
no, been I out. Haven't, but I oh, am really? Going to.
I'm almost positive the new one is like not the original.
No, he goes and steals the Christmas. It's in one of the trailers.
Yeah, but we'll see. We'll have to find out.
Tyler's on the hunt right now.
I know, but actually, more interestingly, is Venom opens in China this past weekend and makes $111 million.
Okay, guys, so that's in one weekend in China, making more money than the number one movie at the box office made here in the States.
Exactly.
It's crazy.
Also, isn't like first weekend of November a little early to be releasing your Christmas movie? Like, I feel like Thanksgiving, I feel like Thanksgiving weekend's the earliest you can release your Christmas.
No, they do that every year. There's always a Christmas
That's
movie that
I
comes
said last
out.
Week, Tyler.
Yeah, exactly.
We already had this conversation. Just go back to episode one.
It was amazing.
Go back to sleep, Tyler.
I'm glad I got Tyler on my team now. I win.
No. You can, first of all, I thought Tyler was going to jump down your throat just 2 minutes ago. So hold on that.
Yeah, but, that's what best friends do, Iggy.
That's what best friends do. Okay. Teammates, you know, Green and Durant were just getting at each other the other night. You guys are too. It's all right. Teammates do that. Okay,
what are you
so,
talking about?
Basketball. But anyway,
that's a basketball reference, Tyler.
Basketball. I pulled out the basketball reference even, winning there.
No one watches the NBA.
No. But anyways, that's probably enough time spent on the box office. Big news is what we have to get to with Star Wars. So, Tyler, Star Wars. I was leading in for you.
Oh, we want to talk about Star Wars? So, for those who aren't aware, obviously, they're doing all sorts of Star Wars things left and right, although they are also cutting Star Wars projects left and right because they've realized they stretched them out too thin. But we do have an announcement, and we've had some production stills of Jon Favreau's live-action Star Wars universe television show called The Mandalorian, which will obviously follow around a Mandalorian wearing the iconic armor. And we finally have a announcement, and that is that the lead of it will be one.
All right.
I'm literally...
You're blowing our ears out.
It's not... You didn't do anything. You didn't move. It just drastically all of a sudden changed on its own.
Because you guys weren't talking. I don't know.
You're good. Let's just go
Pedro,
with that.
Pedro Pascal will now be... has been announced as the lead of the Mandalorian series. So if you're not familiar with him, he was in the Kingsman sequel. He's a big part of the Narcos TV show on Netflix. He had a role in Game of Thrones that he's pretty well known for. Trying to think, what else has he been in? I don't know. He's the man. He's
That's
the Mandalorian
a pretty
now.
Solid list, right?
Dude,
there.
He is Oberyn Martell and embodied him perfectly, I think, in the TV show for Game of Thrones. So I don't.
Yes, he is the Red Viper in Game of Thrones. So that's pretty cool. He is Javier Pena in Narcos, and he was. I don't know. How long has it been since Golden Circle came out? Is it a
2 years? Right,
he was not Channing Tatum or Jeff Bridges.
Well, I was gonna say how can we spoiler it? He's the bad. He's the secret traitor guy, and he was the.
Oh, I get what you're. Oh, yeah.
He was the
traitor. Spoilers. Hashtag spoilers.
After
he's the guy in that. He was in that. What's that? That Denzel Washington.
Oh yeah, he was in Equalizer too.
The second Equalizer.
Equalizer.
Oh, he's also supposed to be a main character in. Wonder Woman 1984.
You're fired, Diggy.
Which is now coming out in 2020.
When it comes out, will it be Wonder Woman
1985. They're going to change it to 1985 because of the year delay. Anyways, all right. So real quick, gaming news. Bigger than I thought it was going to be. Spyro dropped the new remastered game across all three major systems. And let me tell you what, people have bought it like crazy this week. So if you're interested, you missed those days of Spyro from the classic PlayStation. I feel like PlayStation 1, wasn't it? Like the first PlayStation. Yeah. You can go back and hang out with that purple dragon. So, all right. Well, we are close to out of time. Before we hit the final thoughts, I do just want to drop some notes on what's happening with Project Nerd. Of course, you can continue to see all of our Tallgrass Film Festival coverage. As typically in years past, we have so many interviews and reviews that they are coming out weeks afterwards. Additionally, Denver Film Festival reviews, a few of those about to drop. And then this weekend, we are heading up to the mountains, hopefully there's supposed to be snow. We'll see. But we're heading up to the mountains to the Nederland Film Festival, a nice little film festival right here in Nederland, Colorado. Should be fun. I know for This Is Love, which was at Tallgrass Film Festival, we'll be returning here as well. Interested to talk to some of the filmmakers and get to meet some of the people out there. Our last event of 2018, guys. So here we are about to wrap that. Plenty to talk about for 2019. We'll have plenty of tour dates to announce as we are going to be all over the place again. On the production side of thing, I'm Not Famous, episode zero dropped this week. Head on over to Project Nerd, or right here if you're getting it on iTunes, Podbean, Google Store, Spotify, Stitcher. It's all on the same feed, audio-wise. If you want to see the video, though, over on ProjectNerd.com or ProjectNerd.live, we'll take you to our YouTube channel and you can check that out. Our brand new podcast, where Carrie and I are going to have guests, but in this episode we don't have guests, so it's kind of confusing, but you'll get it next week. We'll get it next week with our guests. So other than that, as we've brought up in the weeks past, As I Remember It, the new podcast from the Antagonist Movement co-founder Ethan Minsker, as well as Red Alts from a couple of our Australian buds interviewing rad adults every other week, as well as we've mentioned a few other podcasts about to drop on the new Project Nerd podcast network. Again, all the in-house ones can be found right here on the same feed. But of course, everything, obviously, that's coming from Project Nerd, just head over to project-nerd.com. Check it all out. All the entertainment. Because not only with all that, we have original articles. We've had some great news. We've dropped the trailers. If you still haven't seen the Detective Pikachu one, all there. With that, that's what's happening with Project Nerd. All right, guys, what's happening with you? Let's get some final thoughts. Alphabetically, let's go with Adam.
Yes, let's go with Adam. And we have to keep these short because I have 20 minutes until I can go play Fallout 76. No going long, you guys. Yeah, Niggy, you're going to bring up big gaming news and not talk about a brand new Fallout game, which people will love, hopefully. I think it's going to be very good. You get to play with your friends. You can have private servers so other people can't come and kill you if you don't want to, or you can play amongst all of the lovely things that can happen in internet multiplayer games. So excited about that. Hopefully,
you guys. Are you doing it on console or are you going to do it on your computer?
Console.
All right.
I got on the PS4.
I don't want to buy it for both. I don't want to buy two copies of it, but I may have to.
So are you about ready to leave and go pick it up?
No, Bob, it's already downloaded. It's already downloaded on my system.
Oh, he wants to finish these so he can go play.
I buy digital so that I can download and it's ready to go as soon as they unlock it at midnight Eastern time tonight. Mm. So by the time you guys are listening to this, I will be 20 hours into Fallout and probably enjoying killing my friends.
Bob, what you got for us?
I'm just going to jump back a little, something little humorous. I mean, we started off kind of, you know, sad with the death of Stanley, but something I had caught earlier today, and I just wanted to just point it out that I don't know if you guys saw that the New Zealand newspaper mixes up the obituary for Stan Lee with Spike Lee.
Did not see that.
Yeah.
Very similar guys, though.
Pretty much. Then the headline was "Characters First, Superheroes Next, Spike Lee Dies at 95.
Good job, New Zealand paper there.
I expected more from them. Oh, well.
All right, Tyler, what you got for us?
I just finished two books. The Consuming Fire by John Scalzi, part of the Independency series. It was really good. I also, the newest Barry Cormat movie book by Seth Dickinson, also very good. Upcoming Ben Aronofsky's newest Rivers of London book, number 7, Lie Sleeping, is coming out. I am super excited about it. Also, I am halfway through Red Dead Redemption, but I'm going to have to stop playing it to play Fallout, which I now apparently have to buy for two systems because I have a lot of friends who are going to play it on PS4 and PC. I will probably start on PC and then go from there, but we will see what happens because I love Fallout games. So.
All right, my final thought is enjoy next week. We will be off, obviously, for the Thanksgiving holiday, spending time with family, friends, and loved ones, and not so loved ones, enjoying great, great food, It was a joke, Tyler. It was a joke. Calm down. So, yeah, let us know. Always over at Project Nerd. We didn't find time to talk about it, mainly because obviously we want to spend enough time on the Stan Lee situation. About unique dishes your family makes, what some of your favorite holiday dishes and everything like that. And of course, you're all geeks, so let us know what movies and video games you're buying on Black Friday. We want to hear about that too. Other than that, we'll be back first. Well, no, it'd still be November, I guess. Still be November. Yeah. So we'll be back the last week of November. It's just weird the way the dates fall. Thanksgiving seems a little bit earlier because it's always the fourth Thursday. But we'll be back the week after Thanksgiving. Let's put it that way, with another new episode of the Nerdcast. But until then, enjoy your holidays.